Welcome to the Georgia Politics Podcast. This is Joseph G. of Doraville.org, and we're here to talk about Georgia politics. First, I want to let the panel introduce themselves.
I'm Catherine from Blog for Democracy, and I live in Atlanta. I'm glad to be here. We're at Manuals tonight. It's very exciting.
Yes.
This is Randy Lewis of Georgia Daily Digest and GeorgiaPoliticalDigest.com.
I'm Decatur Guy from Atlanta Public Affairs and sometimes Speech Pundit.
It's Griff Trip from Drifting Through the Grift.
Spacey Gracie Review, and sometimes Speech Pundit.
All right, guys, thanks for making it here tonight. I really appreciate it. Hopefully we can talk over some of the loud voices at Manuals. But first off, the big thing that's happening in Georgia this past month really is the drought. Sonny Perdue is all set to get President Bush to declare Georgia a disaster area because we're losing so much water in Lake Lanier. Unfortunately, the Republican governors of Alabama and Florida intervened to say, hey, wait a minute, we want that water too. And the California wildfires also kind of took a little bit of his steam. So I just wanted to throw it out there. What can the governor do now? What is he going to do now, since it looks like the president isn't going to bail us out?
Well, I mean, my own view, first off, in the interest of full disclosure, I am representing the Georgia Urban Agriculture Council on some issues, and that is the state's landscape industry, and obviously they're the only people who have been had mandatory restrictions imposed on them. So in the interest of full disclosure, I'll say that. But the real issue here is that what I think, and it has been unsaid specifically up to this point, is that the Army Corps of Engineers is releasing three times the amount of water from the lake that they were last year at this time. It is apparent that this has become really a form of water extortion. The Army Corps is doing this in order to force the state to negotiate on the tri-state lawsuit, which has been going now about 17 years. And Georgia has been the state that has primarily been the holdout on reaching a settlement on this. I think what the Corps did, they got a new commander down in the Mobile District, which governs the lake. He stepped up and said, you know what, we'll drain the lake, put pressure on Georgia to come to the table and negotiate, and that's essentially what has happened. The question is, will it come out to the Corps' advantage, or will this now work against the Corps? But it was very clear from what the governor said yesterday that there is a negotiation going on, and he said they are making progress.
Well, here's the question I have about that, Randy, and I've asked this question many times over the past couple weeks and have not got an answer yet. What does the Corps have to do with the Bear Creek Reservoir over in Oconee and Clark County? And what does any of these distractions that the political figures have been running out here have anything to do with that? Are we going to blame Darien for the fact that Bear Creek Reservoir is 18 feet below and actually Clark at Athens is suffering even worse than we are?
Yeah. I mean, clearly there's a drought going on, but the whole idea behind water storage is that you have water stored for the drought. The problem here is that what has happened is we have a drought, and then we should be able to rely on the water that's in storage, but instead the Corps has drained, and they pulled the plug on the tub. And so we don't have that water for the drought that we should have. I really believe it's just a form of political and litigious extortion going on between the Corps and the three states.
Well, I don't want to dominate here, but I want to say you're right on one perspective. It's all about politics right now, and it's about this governor. And previous governors share some of the blame on this too, but this governor, it's on his watch, is finding any way to distract from the fact that there is not a statewide water plan to address a situation like this, and he is doing everything he can to not appear to be Nero fiddling while Rome burns.
Well, you're partly correct. The issues that you're partly correct on is your assessment that I'm only right on part. In fact, I'm right on all of them. And the other portion that you're right on, you said it's this governor and probably the previous one. Remember, this lawsuit's been going on 17 years. That's going to take us back at least three governors, maybe four. So, and there is a statewide water plan, but it's up for...
But it excludes Atlanta.
That's right. It's up for review this year. And the statewide water plan goes to level 4, which is the most extreme level, and it's basically you don't water your lawns. lawn watering is only about 20% of the annual water usage. So you quit watering your lawns, guess what, folks? You still have 80% of your problem. So
it does seem to me, though, that there's like a good chunk of this, like it's very convenient to blame the Army Corps of Engineers. But this problem is really happening because Atlanta has had such unprecedented growth over the past, you know, 20, 30 years, and we haven't been planning for that. So it's kind of like turning around, you know, after you could see this was going to happen. People have been talking about it for years, and it's just kind of like, oh, well, you know, we didn't know, whatever. But
it's really a failure of leadership on both the Democratic and Republican administrations that have been in power for the past 10, 15 years. And it's just, Sonny is the real loser in all of this, I think. Politically, he looks weak. He's called upon the president. The president's not going to do what he says. He's got other Republican governors in surrounding states opposing him. Sonny's alone in an island. And I think, you know, but the Republicans are in charge now. And despite maybe Democrats being in blame, too, in the past, he's in charge. He's going to take the blame on this, and I think he's going to suffer politically if he ever has any future political hopes.
Well, the issue is also Alabama hasn't planned. I mean, look at what was in the paper today. Cherokee County wants to build a reservoir, and one other reservoir, which is under construction, they decided now to expand it. Alabama stepped in and sued to stop that. The point is, they want all of their water to come from Georgia, and they don't want to do anything within Alabama to develop their own water resources.
And they don't have any restrictions.
No,
that's not right.
Oh, it isn't. No.
That is not correct. There's a lot of urban legends running around. I mean, it's literally like lack of water has caused us to go crazy. 60% of the state of Alabama is under restrictions, and places like Dothan, Alabama, down in South Alabama, has been under restrictions for about 6 months now.
Well, I just want to say that I think I'm relatively well informed, and I knew that we were in a drought, of course, and I knew that we had there were water problems because we're on restrictions, obviously, but I had no idea how serious this was until like 10 days ago.
Because nobody's saying anything.
Did we
hear one word about water?
Yes. Conserved water over the last, you know, I mean, I tried to anyway, but I would have been much more conscientious about
Catherine,
it.
Catherine, you're not alone. It's a failure of media here, too.
Yeah.
It's not just a failure of our political leadership, which it certainly is that, but, I mean, there's an extreme failure of... where's the media been? Why has Channel 2 suddenly become Drought Central 24/7? It's Drought TV nonstop. But this was just last week.
Ratings.
Whereas if a line of thunderstorms goes through, it's Storm Watch 2007.
Yeah, exactly.
I was talking to a friend of mine the other day. He lives up near Lake Lanier, and he said, well, I knew about it. And I'm like, well, okay,
where's
you
your
live
press release?
Get to see it, you know, every day, but I don't.
In the governor's race last year, we did not hear one word about water from either candidate.
Well, so what's the solution? I want to know what. Okay, so we're at this point now. What are we going to have to do to get out of the situation we're in?
Litigate everything.
That's already happening.
Well, one thing that Lieutenant Governor Cagle is proposing, once again, we hear the name Cagle in a leadership position in Georgia governance, is streamlining the process to establish new reservoirs, and that is what we've got to do. We've got to find new ways to retain water. Now, there's problems with that, and I mean, it's not like we have saved up great gobs of land along waterways in this state. So you get into the whole legal conundrum of where do the reservoirs go. You know, the one in Cherokee County that you mentioned, I think I read today, they also had a problem because it was going to encroach on private property. So then you get into eminent domain, which is like holy water to a vampire with a Republican.
Answer is praying for rain and hoping rain comes and fills the lakes back up. Otherwise, every other solution is 4 or 5 years away.
But that...
Yes.
It really is.
That's
true.
That
does not fix it. Because, like I said, the Corps has pulled the plug out of the tub. It can rain in biblical proportions, and the lake will still not fill up.
Yeah, but this drought has been going on now, I forget the exact number of years. I mean, people in South Georgia, down where I'm from, have known about it for quite some time. And it has been going on for, I think, the better part of 10 years. So, you know, even if the Corps put the cork in the dam and it rained for 40 days and 40 nights, we would still have problems.
And Atlanta.
And we are too too much into society, and particularly in Atlanta, look for quick solutions when, you know, we are, forget the pun, drowning in problems, and it's not going to be solved quickly.
Well, and again, the state's total response at this point, with 61 days of water by some reports, 81 days of water left by another report, is don't water the pansies.
Yeah.
Right.
And on that,
and blame the mussels.
Well, Atlanta, I love it when they blame the mussels.
I think Atlanta is going to be the bad guy in this. We're going to get kicked around, and maybe rightfully so too. And maybe it will, maybe some minds will be changed about our pace of development in Atlanta and about the concessions we've made to builders and developers in this metro area, because we're pretty much reviled and hated outside of the metro area, and maybe for good reasons. So hopefully some people in our city and metro Atlanta County leadership will start to address some of these problems now.
Well, on that note, let's move on to another issue that's very topical. Just a few days before this was recorded, is Janarla Wilson was exonerated by the Georgia Supreme Court. He has been freed in all of his charges were wiped clean. So anyway, Griffith, I just wanted to go to you and kind of, since you've been following the case probably the most closely out of all of us.
The Supreme Court really took the extreme step here and vacated the original sentence. They even went beyond what the Monroe County judge had reduced it to a misdemeanor. And so Janarla Wilson is not only a free man today, but he does not have a record. He is not on the offenders list or anything. And I have not had a chance to read the full decisions yet, but I think they did what I thought they would do, which is they threaded the needle. They found the one path through all the crazy twists and turns of this case where they could let the young man go. And I believe most people agree the right thing was done. The only people that don't seem to agree that the right thing was done are the people that are, well, besides Randy, is the people that want to make a political statement on this and make this into be some sort of sense of judicial activism. And to even bring up the term judicial activist in terms of the Georgia judiciary is so ridiculous. It's so ridiculously laughable. But I think the Supreme Court did the right thing. And like I said, I think they threaded the needle on this, and they did as least damage as they could to what the law was.
Before Randy steps in, he's currently eating a French fry.
Go, Randy, go.
There's going to be cries of judicial activism, yes. They rewrote the law, is what I've already heard. They rewrote the law. The courts rewrote the legislature's law. That's not what happened. Read the opinion. The opinion said that the law, the previous law, because they changed the law, violated the Constitution, and that it was a cruel and unusual punishment. They didn't rewrite any law. The law remains what the legislature rewrote in 2006. What they said was, as applied to his conviction, it was unconstitutional.
And the ultimate law in the state is the Constitution. So there's no rewriting of the law. It is applying the law that has been around since the last time we wrote the Constitution.
Can we talk about Matt Towery's role in writing this law? Now, am I correct in under he wrote the law and then was sort of shocked and awed at how it was applied in the Janarla Wilson situation and has since fought the law he actually wrote. Is that correct?
It's not only correct, but I believe I heard that he actually submitted a friend of the court brief in support of Janarla Wilson. The word I would use for Matt Towery as to how this was applied to Janarla Wilson was horrified that the law that it was so far from his intent. And actually the part that I did hear about the decision was part of their basis was this was not the original legislative intent. The author of this law came forward and said this was not the intent.
Right, and he's been very clear about that. The author of the law from day one, right?
Yes,
that it was
absolutely
not meant to be used in the capacity that it was used with Janarla Wilson.
Absolutely.
Unfortunately, you know, we have a three-tier system, legislative, executive, and judicial. And unfortunately, on occasion, the judicial branch has to step in and say, the legislature did not do their jobs. The executive branch did not do their jobs. And sometimes, yes, they have to be creative in the way to get justice. And, you know, in Georgia, like I think we let off with, that doesn't happen very often. It's used very sparingly. But in this case, in this individual case, I think it was an appropriate use of the judicial power. And I'm not one that encourages judicial activism or anything like that. But in this case, it was the right thing to do. Randy?
I disagree with the court's position.
Which court, Randy? The manuals court?
Randy is in the dissent.
I'm in the dissent.
That is some restraint there in that opinion.
We've already argued about this before. I don't think my own view is that you cannot reach this decision unless you're willing to significantly misrepresent in your mind what occurred in the hotel room that night.
Well, we all know what occurred in that hotel room.
It's a matter of the record, which the jury saw.
That's right.
Okay.
So that's right.
That's no longer an issue.
Let's talk about the future,
One more thing, though. But this is really important. One last thing. This is really important. You know, this issue is not a new issue. I mean, 30 years ago, when I was in high school, this issue was still there. The issue of when somebody becomes an adult under the law, and their girlfriend, boyfriend is a minor under the law, and they live next door to each other, they go to the same high school, and these things happen. I mean, this has always been around. This is not a new issue.
You're saying sex has always been around.
yeah, clearly. But the law draws different lines in different states. And how we all interpret who's an adult and who's a minor continues to be a problem, regardless of where the state draws the line. And that's really what has happened here, and that is as much part of this issue that the legislature needs to take another look at. We all need to become comfortable with that. In high school, we had a saying, 15 will get you 20.
Send a Jimmy Buffett song.
Yeah,
too.
But I mean, that was when I was in high school. This is going to be a continuing problem. This doesn't settle anything. When you draw that line, and you draw that line in what is essentially high school ages, when hormones are rages, it's going to continue to be an issue. Sorry, Rachel, I didn't mean to shut you off.
Well, there's some other interesting things happening in Georgia. Obviously, the presidential race is being eagerly watched, even if the people in Georgia may not have much to do with actually deciding who the ultimate candidate is who goes on to win. However, one thing I think is kind of interesting is the recent strategic vision poll in which Hillary Clinton is leading Democrats in Georgia over, I think she has double what Obama has right now. And that's just not really what I was expecting when...
You don't know anyone who supports her, right? Everybody says. I don't know anybody who supports her. Nobody ever called me. I think that there's just a lot of momentum for Senator Clinton, and I think a lot of people, I think there's like, people are of multiple minds. Some people think, okay, well, if we elect Senator Clinton, we'll get her husband, and everybody likes the good old Clinton days. Oh, not everybody, a lot of people like the good old Clinton days. I've attended a couple, I will say that I have not committed to any candidate, which is a little bit unusual for me. I usually jump in early, but I haven't this time. I do like her. I disagree with her on some things, but I disagree with all of them on some things. But there is some momentum, and there's a couple of Georgia groups that have formed. And on Friday night, we had a birthday party for her over at Opry Diem, and it was a lot of fun, a lot of fun. 50 or 60 people came out and had birthday cake and hung out.
Hillary Clinton will win Georgia. There's absolutely no question about it.
In the primary.
Yeah, right. let me make that
abundantly clear.
She's just a juggernaut that I don't believe can be stopped. I have my own problems with Hillary Clinton. I don't think she's the perfect candidate. If I had to create the perfect Democratic candidate, it would not be her. Let me continue. But I look at the rest of the field, and I don't see anybody else who's any better, who I think would be a better candidate. She's got the experience. She's got the name recognition. She's got the money. I don't like the fact that we're going to go Clinton, Bush, Clinton, Bush, Clinton. But, you know, given the set of choices we have, I don't see any alternative other than Hillary Clinton. And I think that's pretty much what the nation and Georgia has come to the conclusion of.
There's been a Clinton or a Bush in every presidential election since 1980.
Some of the kids that are going to be voting, that's their entire lifetime. Yeah. All they've known is a Clinton or a Bush, and maybe it is time for a change, but I don't think Obama or Edwards are going to make that change happen down south, at least. No. I just don't...
Well, none of them have a hoot in hell chance of winning Georgia.
No.
Well, but anyway.
Maybe we should talk about South Carolina. Other polls, Georgia.
Other polls that I've seen over the last week or so seem to indicate that Obama still has a shot at winning Iowa.
Well, it might be true because he's from Illinois, which is a neighboring state, but I don't think it really matters. He could win Iowa, but lose New Hampshire and South Carolina, and I think he's done.
And the craziest thing is February 5th, it may all be over.
Yeah. And that's the thing that worries me about Edwards, because if it's all over on February 5th, he is the nominee, we're in serious trouble.
Yeah, I think
because
Edwards
he has no money. He'll have no money. I
thought you meant it was because he would have 9 months to stick his foot in his mouth.
Well, he will have nine months out of money. And 9 months for the Republicans to jump all over.
You know, Edwards is the candidate you want to like, but once you get to the details, you don't like him. I mean, there's no substance to the guy. He's probably make a pretty good trial lawyer, and for 2 days, he could make me vote for giving his client $1 million. But as my president, I don't think.
Well, I think I used this example in the last podcast, but I just try to imagine any of them sitting across the table from Putin, and I can't imagine any of them except Hillary Clinton.
Hillary's
on. On the other hand, I still believe that Rudy Giuliani is the person to be in the Republican field, and I think a Hillary-Rudy race would be so much fun.
So what do you think about Fred Thompson being in the lead?
He's
in the Republican?
He's done.
That the shine.
Even Republicans are tired of him, but he's only been in the race for 3 weeks.
The shine is coming off that toy.
I did attend a private reception with Fred about 2 weeks ago when he was here in Atlanta. And he needs some work.
Yeah.
Let's talk about Hillary's ticket, though, where I think we're all presuming she's going to get the nomination. And maybe that's a gross presumption, but would there anything that, in say, a Clinton-Giuliani matchup, would her choice of a running mate have any impact down south?
Not down south, but it could affect the electoral math nationwide because... It's kind of funny. The two names that I keep hearing for both sides are both governors.
Ron Emanuel.
No.
I heard
no.
that today. That well, came the, up today the, on the
two,
talk show.
The two names I've heard are both governors. They're both first-term governors. Their downside is they were both just elected last year, so they don't have a real high track record.
Bill Richardson.
But they're both in states. One has, I believe, 20 delegates, and one has 25, Ohio and Florida. I forget the governor of Ohio. I think his name is Strickland, but he is a Democrat that sort of fits the Clinton mold of sort of that centrist Democrat, and he pulls Ohio. Then you look down south of Georgia to Florida, there's Charlie Crist sitting there with 25 electoral votes. It's sort of a moderate Republican would go along with Giuliani. So I think the choice of a running mate is going to fit much more in the mold of how does the electoral math play than anything.
Wouldn't that be amazing, though, to have... Florida and Ohio governors after the debacle of 2000 and then the mess in 2004 in Ohio. I mean, it's perfect.
The numbers say.
It's like you couldn't write that.
You win one of those two states, you win the presidency.
Actually, I think you're completely wrong, once again.
Of course you do. Now, we said we were going to try to agree on at least one thing.
The next topic, I think we agree.
You're still wrong.
Okay.
The issue here, I believe, is that Hillary has already picked her running mate in her own mind. That running mate is going to be Bill Richardson.
I think you're right.
He is the governor of New Mexico. He is an old friend to Hillary and Bill going back to college and where they were in London together.
That's a fair argument.
He has a resume that eminently qualifies him to be president right now. I mean, if he were able to gain popularity, he would win. But here's the key. In Democratic presidential circles, privately, people will talk about how the African-American vote is a little bit of a pain in the rear end. It doesn't turn out with quite the numbers that you ever hope, and it's a lot of work. What they're going to do is take a Hispanic strategy. They're going to go with Bill Richardson, who's a Hispanic. They're going to go for the West. They're going to try to lock up California. Also with Bill Richardson, you got a shot at Utah.
Is the Hispanic vote ever swayed an election in this country, or is this going to be the first time?
This is the first time.
I mean, I just have never heard that come up before. We're going to go for the Hispanic.
The Clintons have read this perfectly. Look at the growth of the Hispanic vote in this country over the last 10 years.
They don't vote in the South, so I don't know. I just don't know what they do.
I think it is the West, and it is Florida.
You'll have a vice president speaking Spanish fluently in Florida. You've got large Hispanic votes all over the West. It's a brilliant strategy because you've got Hillary, who claims to be both from Illinois and New York.
And Arkansas.
And the other thing is the issue on Western land issues and Western water issues, which play out very big in the West. You got a Western governor that handles that for you. You take the Hispanic vote all up and down.
He'd be a damn good vice president.
I think Randy's absolutely right.
Are we agreeing with Randy?
Well, I will go as far as I will go as far to say is that's an interesting scenario.
Yeah.
I haven't considered.
Yeah, I think it's not either, and I think that is something to.
Well,
look
I had another. I have another
and Southerners
scenario.
Are once again,
I think it's the only reason Richardson's in the race, quite frankly.
Well, I think the other scenario would be Wes Clark. Yeah. Because of his military background and his Southern roots, because he's also very good friends with the Clintons, and he's stumping for her all over.
Actually, Grayson just touched on it. The problem for the Democratic Party has always been how to win the presidency without winning the South. They can't win the South. So what the Clintons have done brilliantly is they've put together a map that bypasses the South.
Are we irrelevant now, though? If that happens, is the South going to be entirely irrelevant to national politics?
No, because the presidency is not the only thing.
No, of course not.
I mean, the Senate is...
But we just saw our drought, which is not just a Georgia problem, it's a Southern problem, be completely... diverted by the glamour of the California fires. I hate to say that, but this came in very quickly and very, horribly and in a devastating way, and they were gone. But boy, did they suck wind right out of all media attention from our issues that really need attention here right now, I think. And I was very disturbed to see so much attention being taken away from Sunny or Cagle. Actually, it was great when Sonny was away in Japan and Cagle actually got to present some leadership, and then Sonny came back and just, poor Cagle, anyway, the point being here is that, the South just seems to be increasingly irrelevant on a national level.
But I don't think it applies in that case, because I think from a media perspective, the fires are a sexier story. I mean, there's only so many times that you can show the new red clay beaches of Lake Lanier. But if you can show $1 million house burning to the ground, yeah, boy, that's where the cameras are going to be.
I like Ryan O'Neill out running away from the flames, so we can't compete with that. And Sonny, he is not as fit as Arnold, obviously, so we had some issues there, too. Anyway.
Let me bring it back to electoral politics and just touch a little bit on the 2008 Senate race in Georgia. Saxby Chambliss, a little while ago, it seemed like maybe he might be a little bit soft, but really, not a whole lot of Democrats have come out to oppose him. We've got Dale Cardwell. We've got Dale Cardwell. We've got Vernon Jones.
There's plenty, just nobody knows him or they know too much about him.
And Josh Lanier.
Josh Lanier, who's that?
Who's that?
He's from Statesboro.
Who's that?
I mean, do any of these guys have any chance?
Absolutely
not.
Not.
Absolutely not.
Particularly if Vernon
not
keeps paying someone $400 a month.
Who gets $400?
A fellow blogger.
let's not get into that.
I want to know.
Come on,
name
Mary.
Name another blogger receiving $400 a month. My email address is.
The problem is, and I've actually spoken to Josh Lanier, and I actually like him in my brief exchange that I had with him, and I think he's very interesting. The problem is the numbers just aren't there. You look at the strategic vision poll that Randy had on his side, and if the Democrats scooped up every single undecided, they would still lose by about 10 points. So you're starting that far in the hole, and then you have to talk about the money.
And, you know, it sucks that we have to talk about the money, but Saxby is sitting there on what is it, like $5 million?
$3 million? Amount of money.
And the next closest guy is Vernon Jones, which, you know, we could sit here and tell Vernon Jones jokes all day long. He's sitting on a hundredth of the money that Saxby has.
What's he got, about $40,000 in there?
I think he raised $300,000. I don't know how much he has on hand. By the way, I was traveling in South Georgia this weekend. Vernon Jones billboards all over the place down there. Weirdest thing ever.
That would be strange. Did you get a picture?
I did not get a picture.
Oh, man.
So why is Saxby so popular?
He's not. It's just the Democrats don't have any money.
Well, doesn't he have 58% approval rating?
Yeah.
I think the real issue behind this is the, you know, there was this sort of complete transition and turnover at the Georgia Democratic Party now a year and a half ago.
No, only since January.
Oh, okay, only since January, excuse me. And the promise of this was it's going to be a whole new party, and it looks just like the last one.
Can't argue with that.
Well, I don't think it looks just like the old one.
It just isn't effective.
It just isn't very effective. But I don't think it's the same. I think it's
different faces, same ineptitude.
I used to say it was the, you know, meet the new boss, same as the old boss. I don't think it's that. I think it's that that they're trying to be cooperative and you know, build a good team, but they
need somebody in there kicking ass.
Yeah, they do. They need somebody kicking ass, they don't have it.
Yeah.
And I mean, I'm very fond of Jane and of Matt and some of the other people there, but they should be kicking ass, and they're not. And
yeah,
it's not all their fault. I mean, there's nobody.
There's no farm.
There's
thing.
No bench. There's no
yeah.
bench,
right.
And there's anybody that's ready to step onto the statewide stage.
And I think we can blame our other leadership on that.
That's stuff that's five or six years ago.
Yeah, that's,
I mean,
you know,
really
DeBose, Calvin, Bobby Kahn.
Don't get me started on DeBose.
I know. Yeah. I know about you and DeBose.
The Democratic Party farm system has completely collapsed.
There is none.
The first string is thin, and it drops way off from there.
It's like the Dodgers in the 90s. They spent all their money on free agents, and they got no farm team now.
Yeah, nothing happened.
Who's the first string, by the way?
Good question.
Yeah.
Yeah, I didn't really.
It is DeBose Porter.
No, you know who the first string is? They're all out of office. It's Roy Barnes, Max Cleland, it's Kathy Cox, it's Mark Taylor.
Well, I saw Kathy Cox last Friday at the Win List event here at Manuals, and I have to say that she and Mark look great. She's really enjoying her job, her new job, and I'm really thrilled for her. She's really...
And I think they're probably through with politics.
Oh, she's completely...
Oh, they have all said, screw this goat roadie. I'm going to go make some real money.
Well, I don't know if it's that. I think she just was looking for something more satisfying, and I think she found it. And I'm really happy to say that she looked great. She sounded very, very happy.
Part of the problem, though, for somebody like Kathy Cox, who should have been a Democratic nominee, I believe... she's a far better candidate than what we wound up with, is if for those folks who get really into Democratic Party politics, you move out in the front of your army and you find that you're taking more bullets in the back than you're taking from the opposing side. And that's exactly what happened to her. That's the problem with the Democratic Party. And until they quit doing that, no one has a reason to move out front.
I'm not sure that that's really the case. I mean, you look at the Republican primary with Cagle and Reid. I mean, God, bullets were flying in both directions. And still, you had a nominee that the party went around themselves, and they
once
won.
Once Cagle won, everybody lined up.
That is true.
We don't have a Cagle in the Democratic Party. There's no one in the wings either that seems to be able to coalesce, to come together, to you know, provide leadership, to provide...
Well, I think we had Jim Martin. Jim Martin is. But
what is Jim Martin up to these days?
He's
where did he go?
He's back to
back
work.
In the private sector.
He's making some real money.
He's making some real money.
Until we get that.
Well, I think
Canada,
I think that the problem is that there's, there is a very dynamic Young Democrats of Georgia group, and they've put some very good potential leadership in that organization. But they're all very young. Most of them are under 30, under 35. So it's that middle group between like 35 and 50 that
they're all Republicans.
Yeah, or they might be Democrats, but they're red clay Democrats. They're lawyers and professionals who are making a lot of money. And you know, like the Shams and the Scott Holcombs who got burned by the party under the back with the tool shed, and and now they're. And they just said, okay, well, I'll write a check every month or every 6 months, but homie, don't play that anymore.
Let me just give you a scenario as to what I think is wrong with the Democratic Party. We'll go with the assumption that Hillary Clinton is going to win the nomination. And we get past February, and she's moving into summer, and it's time for Hillary to start positioning herself more as a centrist to pick up those last few votes that she's going to need to pick up. And she starts giving a speech on Islamic fascism and sounding a little bit like Bush. And watch, she will get more Democrats tearing her apart.
Oh, she's got Democrats tearing her apart now.
Yeah, it's already got
that. Oh, Jerry and I are like the Hillary Defense League on one of the websites. I mean, I'm not even a supporter, really. I mean, I like her, but... But, the left is already, all over her.
And she voted for the war. So
let me just say, before we finish this...
Last word.
John Edwards co-sponsored that bill.
Oh, yeah.
All right. And on that note...
That's his finger.
We could go around really quick and give final thoughts. Spacey Gracie, did you have anything you wanted to say?
Pray for rain, and it's going to be, 8 more years of Kegel-led Republicans.
I just want to say that this has been really fun, and I look forward to this today, and I'm glad we're back doing it again.
Yeah, I appreciate it getting together. I would take an issue with Randy, though. The only major group so far that has declared that they are going to break away from their nominee are the Christian conservatives, saying that they would not vote and would actually support a third-party candidate if Rudy Giuliani or Fred Thompson were their nominee, not the Democrats.
Thanks for inviting me. It's always nice to be the only conservative at the table.
We tried to get another one. Sorry.
You know what? If the crazy Christians didn't run the Republican Party, I'd probably be a Republican.
That's true. I'm not a Republican. There's a difference. I keep saying that to you.
Whatever.
There's a difference. I am not a Republican.
Well, I just want to say congratulations to Gennaro Wilson, and I hope he's enjoying his freedom.
Yeah.
And I hope he's getting out of Georgia, because I think he should.
And thanks, everyone who is out there listening. We'll try not to be so long next time. And thanks to Rusty and Amber for, as always, hosting this and putting the podcast up. We really appreciate it. Thanks a lot.